court is now ready to hear argument in 070010, Galveston Central Appraisal District versus TRQ Captain's Landing.
Please report. Mr. Hughes will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
This case will require this court to construe the tax code, particularly statute 11182B, and apply those provisions of that statute to specific facts of this case. The American Housing Foundation, AHF, is asking this court to construe that statute in such a manner that it would write a word into the statute. That is, the word equitable into the statute. They even argue on page 13 of their brief that the single most important issue in this case is whether AHF is the equitable owner. I would say that's not true. It's whether or not the owner of the property in this case qualifies for the tax exemption. Just look at the statute itself, 11182. That was passed in the late 1990s to encourage investment in low and moderate income housing.
Can you help me with trying to understand why it would matter whether equitable ownership were allowed or not? Does it the operation of the apartments or the responsibility? Because you're going to get your taxes from somebody at some point, looks like to me.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, the taxes, the exemption would apply, and the property would not generate any taxes.
It could be structured where you wouldn't. I mean, there's a way to structure this where you...
Absolutely. There's a way to structure this deal in which it would have worked.
But so what I'm wondering is why, what does American Housing Foundation get from the structure that they shouldn't have?
Well, you'll have to ask them why they set it up this way. I mean, they could have easily set it up.
I see what they get, but I mean that they shouldn't have.
Well, you mean that they shouldn't have?
If I were the legislature and were writing this statute and I were thinking about putting equitable ownership in, why should I not do that?
Well, that would be up to the legislature to do it.
Is there a reason why they would or they wouldn't?
Well, the corporate entities and structures have their reasons. You know, it's not just a fiction. It's not a fiction for a lot of other purposes. I mean, the fact that it may be disregarded for income tax purpose may be one thing. But in this case, it wants to make sure that the charity itself is the owner of the property. They've structured this in such a way that a limited partnership, a for-profit company, could be the owner of the property.
But they own the entity that owns the property, don't they?
They that own the general manager or general partner of the property. You're right. In this particular case, 100% of the interest ultimately flowed back to AHF.
Right.
Unlike some of the other cases we're going to talk about in a little bit, but the statute doesn't talk about equitable ownership. I mean, that's what. And historically, this court...
I guess I was just wondering if you know of any reason why it doesn't.
I do not. The legislative history is brief and does not mention that. But it's clear that the statute requires the organization, if you're going to get to qualify for the exemption, the organization on property that it owns, the organization itself has to be organized as a CHATO, this community housing development organization.
Does it have to own all of it?
Under the statute as it existed in in terms of equitable ownership, it would not have to own all of it.
100% legal ownership, is that required?
Ownership in the now we're talking about in this case the property is 100% owned by TRQ.
Right, but I'm talking about, you said legal title versus equitable title. I'm talking about legal title. Does it matter how much ownership interest they have as a legal owner of the TRQ?
I don't, the statute doesn't specify it. It doesn't specify how the investors, or classify how the investors have to be organized. It just classifies ownership.
So it just says, so if they say, okay, we have legal ownership, but only 1%, that qualifies?
Well, that's under the dissent in that Jim Wells County case. It would say it would, Your Honor. It would say that if the for-profit companies could own 99% of the thing. In fact,
that leads me to believe that the structure really doesn't matter. If it's from 1% to 100%, equitable, legal, if you can show ownership in one form or another, why would it matter?
Well, it requires that the property be used for low and moderate income housing and that it be owned by and it requires who the owner must be, and the owner must be a chateau. You're right. It's inartfully worded, and you can see it's been amended several times since in its brief history, and it's gotten more limited because of the tax ramifications it's had.
The statute, as you pointed out, doesn't use the term. It's 11182B doesn't use the term legal title or equitable title. It just says owns. And then you cite Black's Law Dictionary, which references legal title. Webster's Dictionary says own means rightful title to, whether legal or natural. I'm not sure what it means by natural, but it doesn't limit ownership to legal title. So the statute doesn't tell us which it includes. What guides do you think we ought to use then to determine whether equitable and legal title are both included in the term own or ownership?
Well, the guide I would point this court to is one of this court's decisions about 70 years ago. It was that Childress case, and cited by both parties in a brief, in which it said that the legal title holder is the owner of the property for tax purposes. And that's been the way the tax code has been applied for years.
But in Childress, the county was a lien holder and couldn't compel legal title unless the purchaser defaulted. In this case, as you pointed out, AHF, American Housing Foundation, ultimately controls 100% of the entities that own the apartments. Mm-hmm. So the argument at least has been made that AHF has complete control over the direct ownership of the apartments. So there's a difference between Childress in this case, isn't there?
Well, but when you talk about the right to compel legal title, has been discussed in a lot of cases, like that Southeast Housing Company case that's cited by them. But it usually is used in terms of equitable ownership to determine who does not have equitable ownership rather than who does. I think that's what Justice Bland pointed out in her dissent in that case. In this case, right here in the lower court.
In Childress, the county was a lien holder. You would agree that AHF is not a lien holder. AHF is in a much different position than the county in Childress.
That's right? Correct. AHF is the principal investor of the property owner in this case.
So what guide should we use when a statute says owns to determine whether that means equitable or legal or only one or both?
Well, if you're going to, I would say you have to just respect the corporate entities and the corporate structure that the property owner chose to place this thing or this land in. What you have to do. And in this case, it rather than place it in the hands of a nonprofit corporation, it chose to place it in this for-profit limited partnership. I'm not sure what all the tax. I'm sure there's a lot of income tax implications that went into that. I can't tell you what they were. Mm-hmm. But
so then, if X company owned 100% of Y company, which owned the and both are charities, which owned the apartments, and only X is a chattel, a community housing development organization, you would say Y doesn't qualify as a to get the tax exemption under 11.182B.
If Y was the legal title holder, I would say that.
Even though basically the companies, the charities are all the same directors, complete ownership of one or the other, you still would say that formality restricts them from getting the tax exemption.
That's our position here. It is. I think it's in comport with the way these tax statutes are to be construed, and how the Constitution would mandate that ad valorem taxes be imposed in an equal and uniform manner. And because of that, the exemptions are the antithesis of equality and uniformity, and they are not favored, and they should be strictly construed with that North Alamo case some years ago. And in the Bullitt case, goes on to say that the exemptions can't be raised by implication, but must affirmatively appear.
Well, I understand that, and yes, we've said that. What does it mean to strictly construe a statute that says owns, but doesn't tell us if that means legal or equitable title? Depending on which dictionary you read, it could mean legal and equitable, or just legal, I guess. So what does it mean to strictly construe that statute when it says owns, if we're trying to decide what owns means?
Well, owns, well, for example, in the other context, when trusts are set up, the trustee holds legal title. But the trustee, it may be coming out of the beneficiary's money eventually, but it's the trustee upon his entity upon whom the taxes are imposed. And that's legal title, even though the beneficiaries can have full use and enjoyment of it, because you can be murky and confusing when you start parsing who various owners are. But if you have a simple rule, he would keep it simple, and so only one entity is responsible for the payment of the assessed taxes on that property.
There have been a number of these cases. Did any of them start before the last, before Section E was adopted?
Well, this case applied to property before Section E came into existence. It was generated, I guess it was filed after E came into existence. But since the properties here were built prior to December of 01, it just didn't apply.
I was just wondering if the legislature has reacted to this litigation.
Well, I think they have. If you look at it, there's even 11-182-5 that's been passed a few years ago that tended to restrict the properties even more. It applies to properties even further down the line. And it makes the exemption a little bit tighter. It does allow that E-type exception for property owners if the chattel owns 100% of the general partner, which is faded in the E exception as well.
But there have been at least four cases, and they're going different ways. And I was just wondering if you think the legislature has reacted to that at all.
I'm not aware of it. It's like you said, it's for a statute that this thing has arisen in 1999, I think. It's generated a lot of litigation. And as such, I'm sure it's a lot that comes up for the appellate record, because by their nature, the ad valorem cases are generally questions of law and get subjected to summary judgment and get before the appellate courts and this court on a regular basis. What I would, say is that, we're arguing for strict construction and no exemptions by implication. And in this case, the Court of Appeals kind of bent over backwards to give an exemption by limitation, by implication, I'm sorry, and it liberally construed the statute rather than narrowly construed it.
Of course, the term owns is somewhat ambiguous given the circumstances. And the purpose of the statute is to get these low-income housing developments online, maintained, and that's the inducement to get that done. How does equitable ownership somehow violate the spirit and intent and purpose of the statute? If you get the cash in, you get it taken care of, they're taking care of the housing developments, doing all of those things the legislature wanted done, how is it unreasonable for the term owns can be construed both equitable or legal as long as we get it taken care of?
How I would address that, Donna, is that it breeds clarity into the situation. Because once you start looking into who equitable owners are versus legal owners, it could be a murky situation. And then you know you have one entity upon whom the tax should be imposed and whether or not they qualify for it. That the example I gave earlier, I don't know whether about the trustee. You know, he holds legal title. That's the one who, and it's undisputed, he's the one whose the taxes are assessed against and who is responsible for paying the taxes. It would at least bring clarity into the statute.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Hughes. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondents.
Please, the court. Mr. Blanchard will present argument for the respondents.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, by enacting Section 11.182 of the Texas Tax Code, the Texas Legislature evidenced its intent to promote the charitable purpose of providing housing to the poor and needy by providing an exemption. A portion of that statute, subsection D, indeed requires that of the tax exemption granted, 40% of that amount will be reinvested in that low-income housing to provide social or economic assistance and educational assistance. The question, as the court has already ascertained, is what is the meaning of ownership as set forth in Section 11.182? Now, the petitioner invites this court, under the mantle of strict construction, to ignore the legislative intent behind Section 11.182.
Well, it doesn't exempt these properties. It exempts certain organizations, right?
That's correct. The language...
For instance, if I own a low-income housing apartment building, I couldn't get the tax exemption.
If
I'm not a charitable organization.
Assuming you are not, that's correct, if you're not a CHOTO or a charitable organization.
And I assume that TRQ Captain's Landing LP is not a charitable organization.
That is correct.
You wouldn't get investors. Investors don't invest in charitable organizations. They invest in profitable organizations, right?
That's not correct. That is not correct. And that goes to the issue under subsection E, where tax credits are given so as to encourage for-profits to come in and invest money in return for which they get tax credits. So
which kind of tax credits?
They are low-income tax credits under subsection
E. Income tax credits.
Yes, sir. Income tax credits. Yes, sir. But what it does, in effect, is to provide a return, an equity investment return.
But the investors do this because they're going to get something out of it.
If they are a for-profit, that's correct.
No, I'm talking about your limited partners.
If a for-profit comes in under E, which is not the case, not the facts in this case, that's a correct assumption, Your Honor. In our case, you have a series of transactions that occurred at the very end of 2003 in which an entity under 11.182B, American Housing Foundation, which is a qualified CHOTO, Community Housing Development Organization, which is in the sole business of providing low and moderate income housing, acquired, in essence, the sole control of this entity that owns TRQ Captain's Landing Apartments.
So why don't you do it that way? They're saying if AHF just bought the apartments, no problem, we give you an exemption.
I think that's exactly what they're saying. And what they're saying is that under Section 11.182B, which references the term owner twice, that must necessarily mean legal title owner.
Why didn't you do it that way?
Because of the way that it's irrelevant as to why. Because if...
No, but I just want to know. Why did you do it that way? This case goes away if you'd have done it that way. Why didn't you do it that way?
At the end of 2003, when you're looking at a tax exemption that encourages the acquisition of this property, it was simply structured that way for convenience, Your Honor. I think one of the things that this court has focused on, but you need to look at, for instance, and the question keeps coming up, why didn't this statute specifically relate to legal ownership? If you go to the tax code, and we pointed this out in our brief, under Section 152.001, the legislature, in fact, did define legal title ownership as the mechanism. It said that it defined an owner of a motor vehicle as the person named in the certificate of title as the owner of the vehicle. Clearly, in this case, had the legislature intended to limit
the term owner in 11.182B, they could have easily said the legal title owner is entitled to an exemption, but they didn't do that.
Do you think that means that owner, whenever used in the tax code and not defined as legal owner, it would always include equitable ownership?
I think that it certainly, that argument could be made, but and it's like this court has said, owner is not a defined...
about that, the Court of Appeals seemed to worry about that because Justice Kais seemed to be nervous that Justice Bland had a point in saying that if you always included investors in this group of owners, that might broaden this holding far more than it was intended.
It won't, Your Honor, to the extent that if there is an equitable ownership, then that equitable owner has got to meet the requirements of 11.182B. And those requirements are that it's a charitable organization and that it's a CHODO. It's a community housing development organization, which by definition...
She's not worried about 11.182. That's true. You got to do all these other things. We're just worried about if you say own includes everybody that has a claim or might be able to finagle a claim, that's going to give those people a lot of folks to go after that are then going to raise Cain saying, wait a second,
Well, as this court pointed out in Realty Trust, its 1938 case, the term owner has no definite legal meaning. Quoting from this court, the meaning of the term owner is not the same in all circumstances. It's not a technical term or word at all, but one in wide application in various connections. In all instances, its meaning must be ascertained from the context and the subject matter.
Well, in this context, if the taxes aren't paid, they're going to foreclose, and they're going to ask for a judicial foreclosure usually, and that's going to be against the legal title owner. So why shouldn't we just limit the fight to who it's normally limited, which is them and the legal title owner?
Because you've got to look at the legislative intent, and the legislative intent is to allow for a charitable organization, a CHODO, that has ownership of the property to go in and provide this charitable function, which is to provide appropriate housing to those who can least afford it, the poor and needy of the state. So when you look at it in that context, if there are indeed, if we reverse the roles and say, taxes are going to apply. Who bears the burden of those taxes? American Housing Foundation. Everything that relates to these apartments flows to and from American Housing as the ultimate equitable owner of the property.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
Certainly that's a laudable goal, and it seems to certainly be an intent of this statute. You could also argue the intent of the statute, though, is to limit this exemption to the parties who meet the terms of the statute. It's a laudable goal, but not for everybody.
I agree.
For the folks who meet the requirements.
Yes, sir.
So why don't we just look at what's the expressed intent rather than the intent that may not be expressed in these words?
Well, when you say what is the expressed intent, the legislature said the owner. And I guess that in a sense begs the question, what is the owner?
It does.
It certainly doesn't. They clearly could have said the legal title owner. They didn't. They clearly
because
could have said,
because it's a tax exemption, why wouldn't you give it a narrower definition?
The whole rule of strict construction simply says you've got to interpret it according to what the legislature intended.
Right, but we're limited. We're exempting people, property from taxation.
That's correct. And so you look at what was...
You wouldn't want that to be a broad application. You would want it to be narrow.
Clearly.
So if you have a word that's subject to two interpretations, one narrow, one broad, why wouldn't you pick the narrow?
That assumes that equitable is broader than legal.
It could be. Sure could be.
No, I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I think the term owner simply implies that party that has control and ownership of the property. Owner
you could look
is an
at
owner.
The record title.
I beg your pardon?
You could look at the legal record title and see who the
you
owner
could.
Is. The legal owner.
You could, but that's not necessarily a more narrow interpretation, Your Honor.
Where would you look to find the equitable owner?
To look to find the equitable owner is the party that as this court has
My
defined.
My point is, it's not in the land titles.
So how would the appraiser find them, or them? It could be multiple equitable owners.
If the question is the taxes are assessed against the property, and clearly if those taxes aren't paid,
I think you're right. You can go in, you can post it for foreclosure, you have your security in the real property itself. And so those taxes are going to have obviously go flow through the party that's the record title owner initially. Who bears the ultimate burden, as this court's pointed out, is the equitable owner of the property, who owns not only the limited partner, but the general partner as well. So your first line in terms of assessment is clearly to say the record title owner applies or receives the notice, I guess you would say. Who ultimately bears the burden of those taxes? It's the equitable owner. Clearly, in this case, American Housing Foundation bears the responsibility for all costs associated with the property, and it qualifies for the exemption.
Counsel, the tax code, 11182E, says that in addition to the requirements of 182B, an organization must be, to satisfy the tax exemption, to obtain it, must control 100% of the interest in the general partner if the project is owned by a limited partnership.
Yes, sir.
Now, that wasn't in effect, doesn't govern this case.
Has no bearing on this case.
But that was added after 182B.
Correct.
AHS wouldn't satisfy the requirements for that, would it? Because it doesn't own 100% of the general partner, the limited partner that owns the property.
It would qualify as the equitable owner. It owns...
No, that wasn't my question.
Okay.
AHS does not own 100% of the general partner of the limited partner that owns the apartments.
It does equitably, Your Honor.
But not legally.
Well, it is not the record title owner. CD Captain's Landing is the sole limited partner in this partnership. It is the sole member of TRQ Galveston, LLC, which is the general partner. So to the extent that it could compel legal title back to American Housing Foundation, yes, it's the equitable owner. It's not. It is not the sole member on the books of the general partner, TRQ Galveston, LLC.
Well, if what's the purpose of adding 182E, do you think?
The whole purpose of 182E was to provide a financing mechanism. 182E simply provides that...
It clearly was intended to limit 182B, don't you?
No, sir.
Not extended?
I don't... No, sir.
Well, if it says... Well, let me just ask you. It says, in addition to meeting the requirements of 182B, you've got to meet this requirement in E.
That's correct.
So
it says in addition to meeting the applicable requirements of 182B. That's right. Correct. The confusion over 182B, Your Honor, is that 182E provides says that if a partnership is financed with low-income tax credits, what the courts have done is to say that you've got to both be a CHOTO under B and be the owner under E. Well, E provides that a limited partnership owns it. By statute, a limited partner can't be a CHOTO. It can't be a nonprofit. The Uniform Partnership Act says, explicitly, that a partnership is one for profit, two or more individuals for profit. So when you go into E, which is the whole purpose is to provide a financing mechanism using low-income tax credits, if you require that the CHOTO own the property, why does it need tax credits? It doesn't pay taxes. It's a tax-exempt entity.
So E expands B to allow limited partners into the equation.
That's correct.
In your view.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Are there any other concerns about liability for the operation of the apartments or insurability or kinds of concerns?
Well, certainly when you look at the way you structure these things, I think, as any prudent entity would do, you look at the concerns relating to liability and so forth. As this point pointed out in an unrelated case, Willis versus Donnelly, that's the whole reason we have corporate structure is to try to shield one, an entrepreneur, from the liability that flows to you individually if you don't use the corporate structure. So clearly those issues are confronted by a number of entities, including a not-for-profit such as American Housing Foundation.
Can you see the potential for abuse? Counsel alluded to, your opposing counsel alluded to, where there could be numbers of entities involved and maybe instead of 100% control at the top of the totem pole, maybe only 51%, and some for-profit entities here, and it could get pretty complicated, couldn't it?
No, sir. Under B.
Don't see any potential for abuse.
No, sir. Under B, B is very, very clear. Under 11182B, it says that it must be a community housing development corporation. That's 11182B1. It must meet the requirement of a charitable organization under 11.18 of the tax code, and it owns the property for the purposes of building or repairing housing for low-income individuals. There's really no chance for abuse because whether it be legal title or equitable title, the owner has to be a CHOTO. It's got to be a charitable organization. The whole purpose behind 11.182 was to provide a charitable function, provide affordable housing to those who can't afford it. And so the legislature said in order to ensure that, we're going to require that a charity be over, that it own that property, and that it have control of that property, whether it's by legal title or by equitable title. I mean, this whole scheme in which American Housing and structure by which American Housing Foundation owns and controls this property fits squarely within the four corners of this statute. There is no stretch here. There is no ownership by implication. It owns the property. It controls the property. It takes the, and if it gets the exemption, it will take the 40% that it would otherwise pay in property taxes and put it back into the property, or risk losing the exemption. It will do that which the legislature expressly requires it to do. And if it doesn't do that, then it fails, and it loses the exemption. This issue of equitable ownership has been addressed by this court going back to 1884 in the Galveston Wharf case, where this court said even if, and it was confused and it wasn't clear from a consent decree, whether or not the city of Galveston had legal title, whether it had title to stock, whether it had title to property, but it said regardless, there can be no doubt that the decree vests in the city such a beneficial interest in the property sufficient to extend the tax exemption. Texas Turnpike, although saying that the state was not the beneficial owner because it didn't have the present right to compel legal title by virtue of these contingencies over which it had no control, certainly by implication or implicitly stated that equitable ownership was sufficient to receive the tax exemption. I think a case that is as close to being on point as you will often see is the Harris County versus Southeast Texas Finance case, in which the property, the housing project, was owned by a qualifying entity just as American Housing Foundation, and the court ruled that Southeast was the equitable owner because it had the present right to compel title and ruled that it was entitled to the tax exemption. It is as close as you can get to the facts of this case. You know, the ultimate goal here legislatively is to make low-income housing financially viable for those entities who buy, build, or rehabilitate them. Because it is offered, the low-income housing is offered at greatly discounted rates, there's little margin available to make such projects financially viable. The removal of the property tax burden can be the difference between viability and non-viability. Not only that, as I pointed out, the legislature requires you to take some of the funds that you would otherwise pay in taxes and roll it back into the property. Finally,
those are great goals.
I beg your pardon?
All of those are great goals, but there's an easy way to do that, which is just to own the property. And so I'm confused with this, you know, gosh, we really got to do this. We need to encourage this. But we didn't do it that way because it was inconvenient. But it's, and I'm, so if the only reason to not let people do this, like AHF, is because it's, or not let them tax them is because it's inconvenient, then that, I have a hard time balancing that with the inconvenience this may cause in all the rest of the property tax, which is millions of other properties and entities.
Certainly, if the court were to rule that you have to have legal title, You also have to consider whether or not that's going to discourage charitable organizations
that's
from doing it.
That's the argument I'm looking for. Why would it?
Well, because of the because in any setting, just as I pointed out in the Willis versus Donnelly, the structure that's used, which protects a charitable organization from exposure to whether it be tort liability or otherwise, is one that's going to encourage you to go in and acquire these properties to rehabilitate them and to provide the housing. If you simply take away that level of protection that this entity or any other entity needs in order to protect itself and its charitable goals, then what you're doing is taking out of that housing market potential owners of property who otherwise might be there, Your Honor. I mean, clearly the corporate structure provides a level of protection not only for a for-profit, but for a foundation such as American Housing Foundation. It clearly provides a level of protection that's going to encourage them to go in and acquire this property, to rehabilitate it, and to provide the housing that's so desperately needed and that would otherwise fall on the shoulders of the county or the state if not provided by these charitable organizations.
But nothing says you can't. You can be a charitable corporation. No problem. You can be. It doesn't outlaw corporations.
Clearly.
I assume American Housing Foundation is one of some kind. So why? Oh, gosh, we've got to have corporate protection. Fine, be a corporation, but just own it.
Well, clearly you can do that. But just as in any other aspect of life.
Why is it going to cause this to collapse if we say, look, you have to own it?
Just like in Southeast Housing, they went in and used various single entity or organizations to own the properties. That's simply the way that these are financed and structured. An organization like American Housing has housing projects all over the country. Clearly going in using single entity limited partnerships or corporations is the preferred way to do it. It's pointed out in the Harris County versus Southeast Texas case.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just to follow up on a point, one of the questions Justice Brester was asking, is that you're right that the chattel or the charity could have purchased this thing, but it chose not to. It chose to put it in a limited partnership. Some of the reasons advanced for this may have been some protection, liability protection instances. What I would urge is that they want to get the benefits of the exemption, but they want the protection of the liability. And you can't have it both ways. Is what I would argue. And the other thing, the point was made, it was structured this way for convenience. I mean, it's a complicated ownership structure. When you look at all those triangles, and if that's a convenient way to own it, it's beyond me. It's beyond my legal abilities to even envision something like that.
This isn't very convenient either, being here.
Well.
Up here, I should say.
And the other thing I was going to follow up on one question that Justice Heck raised earlier. I think you can argue that 11-182-5 sort of clarifies this thing because it the statute itself says that notwithstanding subsection B, they can still qualify if it's a general partner of the organization or limited partnership that owns the entity. I think it made it clear by that something less than record title owner would be applicable.
But that doesn't apply here because it's still one more step removed.
Well, and it doesn't apply because the years don't work for it in that
but
case.
If it were, but for the years, would 1825 apply?
Oh, I think, well, except in this case, the chattel is not even a general partner.
Right.
It's one step removed from that.
The chattel owns CD Captain's Landing, which is the 100% member of TRQ Galveston, which is the general partner.
Correct. Then the other point I was going to make is they were talking about Southeast Texas financing, which was relied upon by them. I would argue that case is irrelevant to this one. That case did not deal with the same statute we're talking here, 11-182. That case didn't deal with chattels. It dealt with government housing. That was a structure owned by the government itself, and it's one that was created under the Housing Finance Corporations Act. And I say why that's an important distinction. If you look at that, the enabling statute there, it's under the local government code. 394.051, and unlike this statute, it specifically allows the housing authority not to hold record title to the property. And I think it's an important distinction, and it's one that it could have been dispositive of the case. That court went on and started talking about all the right to compel legal title and all those issues, which I don't even think it needed to get to address that situation. The other thing, it was our last point of hour. I'm not going to even speak to this today, but whether equitable ownership is sufficient to qualify for the exemption was not even raised at the summary judgment stage. Their whole argument at that point was that they were qualified under 11 and 182E. And even they noted, and the argument was that it applied even though this was a pre-2001 apartment complex. And so we've got to come full circle, or AHF has come full circle. And in closing, I would just say that, they're the entity that structured this thing. They're the ones that set it up for a purpose, and they've got to comply strictly with the provisions of the statute in order to come within the exemption.
Thank you, Counselor. The cause is submitted. That concludes arguments for this morning. And Marsha will now adjourn the court.
Rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.